I'm interviewing Bishop Chavez from the Diocese of San Diego. He is the Auxiliary Bishop of San Diego. Shared themes. One, Exodus 5, 5th verse, 1st to 2nd. No, 5th chapter, 1st to 2nd verse. Let my people go so that they may keep a feast in the wilderness in honor of me. Black theology, African theology, and Latin American liberation theology have used the theme of Exodus from the Old Testament as a starting biblical point. In Exodus against such opposition from Pharaoh, Moses led the Hebrews out of Egypt. Without God's help, Moses would not have succeeded. What are your thoughts on the Exodus event in the Old Testament as compared to the cosmic oppressive experience of the Chicanos? Is the Exodus theme a viable theme for a Chicano theology of liberation?
Well, it's a good tool for the starting point, and you know, it's valid for all people. I don't think it's valid just for one race or one nation. It's a valid starting point as a historical point and as a model or motivation. Idea. It can be applied to any movement who's in search for a better living condition, in search of human dignity. So there's no question that there is a validity. The only question is whether the people themselves, the Chicano, are aware of the biblical motivation or biblical reasons, since many of them don't read the Bible. But of itself, it's a good example of motivating people to liberation of human dignity.
Number two, Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe. Almost all Chicano Catholic homes in the barrios of the Southwest display Guadalupe's picture. Pachucos will tattoo her entire image on their backs. In the oppressive experience of the Chicanos, the role of the Nuestra Señora de Guadalupe is one of a strong, symbolic, spiritual mother who is always there to lend a helping hand to the poor. Moreover, because of our oppression, there exists a strong identity between our oppressive experience and the symbol of the suffering Christ. One is only to look at the gruesome crucifixes in our Chicano churches to deduce that Christ is one of us. Hence, the concept of Guadalupe as a liberator and mother of the oppressed is a phenomenon very real to us. Miguel Hidalgo de Costilla, Emiliano Zapata, and Cesar Chavez have all symbolically advocated her assistance to ward off institutions of government and capital that breed oppression. What are your thoughts on Guadalupe as she relates to the universal oppressive experience of the Chicanos in the Southwest?
Well, I think that of itself, Our Lady Guadalupe, as transmitted to the Chicanos in the barrio, is not really liberating. I think that they take it more as a mother figure or something sacred. In their lives, they're always looking for something. Everyone is looking for something sacred, and for people in the barrio or gangs, everything that's sacred is the super mother, and that's the Blessed Virgin Mary. But I don't think that they conceive the Blessed Mother as liberating. Rather, they see her as protective, just like the U.S. government protects the citizens. The Blessed Mother has some kind of a mystical, religious protection over them. But it's not, I don't think it's very the people have not become aware of a liberating process. It's only when they become aware of a liberating process that then they can attribute a liberating process to different persons in history, like Moses and Our Lady Guadalupe. But if they have no concept of liberation, then they cannot really see that concept in a person. What I'm saying is that a great number of them don't have a correct concept. They have a wrong image. But a person who's educated and has been around with different people who have different ideas, then they'll be able to see in Hidalgo a liberator, or in Washington a liberator, or Moses a liberator. But if they don't have a good concept of liberation itself, then they cannot really apply it. I think the only ones that can apply it are maybe some students and some, like in Latin America. But even in Mexico, they don't apply it as a liberating movement, because there is no process of liberation. It's only when there is a concern for a process of liberation can you look for liberating persons.
You believe that, taken positively, that the symbol could be used as like Chavez uses it, mm-hmm. definitely to awaken the farm workers mm-hmm. toward
Well, I think he uses it to give it a religious atmosphere and a religious power to the movement. But he is a liberating person, mm-hmm. and the Blessed Mother is like the calling on the Blessed Mother to assist them in their process of getting right wages. But it's not really a liberating. It's not really the fighting for a union. I don't think it's really a liberation movement. It's only simply a concern for getting just wages, but it's not really a liberating movement in all its implications. It's only concerned with one little aspect of life, which is a better salary. But it's different from the Moses Exodus, which there is a total liberation, and here it's only a partial liberation.
Mm-hmm. Number 3, La Raza Cósmica. Excuse me. José Vasconcelos, a Mexican upper class intellectual, introduced the term in 1925. His book, La Raza Cósmica, Misión de la Raza Iberoamericana, was published in Paris. In dealing with race, class, and national issues, this book is very controversial. It has not been translated into English. No le conviene al anglosajón que este libro sea traducido, at least not one from a Mexican neighbor, such as Vasconcelos. The imperialistic tendencies of North America are early disclosed in his essay. Vasconcelos wished to find common ground and a common identity to establish some kind of political and spiritual cohesion in Latin America, which was being economically divulged by European and North American interests. Moreover, Germany at the time was persecuting the Jews and advocating racial supremacy by actively toying with natural selection of human beings. Chicanos have been downtrodden for nearly 150 years in the Southwest, adopted the term La Raza as a rallying cry for unity and justice during the 60s and early 70s. A resurgent prior rose in being Chicano and a member of La Raza once again. In your opinion, what are the positive and negative aspects of this symbolic concept? In our present-day reality, what new light, if any, could we shed on it? Observing the historical development of this concept, is it a viable symbol for liberation?
This idea of the cosmic race, Well, that is a viable symbol.
Yeah, more or less the way Vasconcelos introduced it as Chicanos and Mexicanos being, you know, a conglomeration of the four races. But what I think the point I'm trying to make is that Vasconcelos was a product of his time, and being a product of his time, he was also a racist, because there was a hierarchy of races that he entertained. But what I'm trying to say is that when we use the term, I mean, ¿qué contenido tiene eso in relationship to say, I'm pretty sure that Vasconcelos plays a role in that, in the term. But how does that serve to give more impetus to the people who have suffered from inferiority complexes because of the downtrodden condition that, you know, that we have found ourselves in, say for the last 150 years, ever since the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, primarily.
Whether it benefits the raza or... Well, I think that any article that helps to a better understanding of the Hispanics and to try to help them to lift them up from their misery indirectly is helping in a liberation process. You know, like Cesar Chavez, his work is not totally liberating, but it's partially, and it's a process. Helps in understanding of a process. Like this man's, his ideas of helping the Hispanics or the oppressed or the minority or the ones with the inferiority complex, I think that trying to give motivation and guidance to students and to other people is trying to say that this is a cosmic race, the Hispanics. It's trying to give importance to the race. It's trying to lift up the race. In a way, any lifting up is part of a liberation process. They're trying to give respect and human dignity to the Hispanics. And I think in that sense, you're liberating from an inferiority complex and trying to give them a superiority complex to elevate them to that cosmic level. And that is, in the psychological area, I guess, a type of liberation. It's not a complete, but it's a partial liberation in that area. And I think that any person that's trying to motivate the oppressed and motivate the suffering people to have some dignity in themselves is liberating. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not complete, but it's like a motivating force. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the only purpose he serves to, even though he comes out of a high class mentality, I think that it's legitimate to be helping other people who are oppressed. I think that it's a mutual help or a mutual assistance. So he's offering us an assistance, whether the concepts themselves or whether they're really truthful, it doesn't really matter. It's more like a dream, saying that the cosmic race is more like a dream than a reality, but it's a dream that motivates.
Okay. Number 4, Machismo y la Mujer. Leo D. Nieto, in his article, The Chicano Movement and the Churches in the United States, beckons us to deal with the issue of the oppression of Chicano women by Chicano men. And he states, if the matter of the equality between the sexes is not resolved, then true liberation cannot be achieved by Chicanos. If all of us are not free, then none of us are free. What steps can we take against the machismo concept which dehumanizes women in our society?
Yeah, the only thing that little statement that if all of us are not free, none of us are free. I think it's a little, that's the ideal. Just because they're divorces, it doesn't mean that therefore all marriages have to end up in divorce, because not all of them are happy marriages. So just because they're not all of them are happy marriages, and that there are some divorces, so it doesn't mean that therefore everyone's unhappy because there's divorces. So even though everyone is not free, it doesn't mean that therefore no one really is free. I think that there are some free people, and there are many people who are slaves. But I don't think, it's too generic, I think, that statement.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe if I was to say, the whole concept of machismo is you know, utilized in the, mm-hmm. in la cultura. For example, I can think of some positive aspects of machismo, and I can think of some negative aspects of machismo. And some of the positive aspects, I would say that courage would be a mark of machismo. This is handed down from our Indian ancestry, and that's the type of machismo. I can also see where cowardice it would be a negative concept of machismo, o donde el que tiene más poder se aprovecha que el que tiene less. In muchos casos, well, we've been accused, and then they say that we're all guilty. Of course, everybody's guilty of the oppression of women, especially in this country. That's why the movement of the women in this country is so strong, is because the women have been, you know, oppressed highly. However, it's different when you talk about Chicano, the oppression of Chicano women, the oppression of Chicano black women, and the oppression of white women. The culture, there's more, I would say there's more oppression with the black and the brown and the red than with the white. I don't know, what do you think?
Well, I think
that's how I will utilize the term.
I think that's a gradual process. It might be true that there's more oppression in Chicano women, but it takes might take a billion years before there's a real, adequate liberation of women, because 50% of many of the women are very conservative. They're not interested in liberation. So to force them to accept liberation is against liberation itself.
Has to come from within them.
Yeah.
Any movement has to come within mm-hmm. the people being oppressed themselves. Mm-hmm. But you're right.
And I think that the it's true, but that there is more in perhaps in the Chicano than in the American. But that same token, there's many things that are very negative in liberating women. Mm-hmm. And so just being liberated to what? If it gives more dignity and more human rights, I think no one really is against it. But if it it opens also a can of worms, more problems with the family, and less attention to the good children, and more family and social problems because of liberation. I think that there has to be a natural growth, and what is the natural growth of liberation? I don't think anyone knows. What is the natural growth process of liberating women? But they say that like in many places in Latin America, the liberation of women is not a concern. It's primarily a concern of a technological society here in the U.S., but it's not really a concern in the third world. Third world are not concerned about liberation of women. There are other things more important, and it's a minor issue. In the United States, it's a major issue because of the circumstances. So what might be major here is not major in the third world. But there is obviously a necessity for growth. How many thousands of years it will take, I don't know. But everyone, in all areas, there is room for growth. I don't see there is no limitation to growth in the areas of life.
Number 5, racism, classism. Our people use the term todos hijos de Dios or todos hijos del diablo. How would this statement relate to the issue of racism and the issue of classism? Latin America, Europe, and Anglo-Saxon theology have said that the real issue is class. Black liberation theology has contended that the issue is one of race. Judging from our own experience, what will Chicano say?
I think it's both for Chicanos, I think it's class and race, because of the Indian situation. Therefore, it's race. The European is superior to the Indian, as it manifested here in the United States, and propagated by books and movies. And Chicano has Indian blood in his historical background. And also class, because class is something that is, distinction is something that is found in every country. And it has been part of many years of tradition, or centuries of tradition, the distinction between the rich and the poor. So both terms are part of the Chicano identity or background.
Mm-hmm. How about the saying that, you know, that's used in our huge families, well, not huge families, but large families, when the mamas and the, when the, con los madres y los padres dicen todos hijos de Dios o todos hijos del diablo. We talk about distributive justice, I guess. Could you comment on, you know, why? ¿Por qué decimos eso? Or la razón por qué se dice, you know, entre la raza. Or did I answer my own question?
I don't know. It's not too popular here in California. I think it's more of a Texas idiom or saying, really, like California. Here in California, it's not. But I gather that it means that. There's that choice, or there's that division between good and evil, and one wants to be in the winning side. And the winning side is the most powerful one, which is expressed in by religion and God. And the all are evil, todos son del diablo, is those who have chosen, those families that have chosen, usually because people work by families, or the family that's chosen to be anti-God, and or are all the sons of Satan.
Mm-hmm.
It reflects the family unity, the idea of family, mm-hmm. that saying.
Mm-hmm.
And our entire family all belong to God, or entire family, they're all rotten, and they're anti-God and anti-society.
Mm-hmm.
And the family has a great influence in the behavior of the children, mm-hmm. more so than any other society, I think.
Yeah. I think you're right, it is more Texas. Because in Texas, we've used it when it's time to share. That's why I put it classism and racism. And when it's time to share, either we're all sons of God, or we are sons of the devil. But we can't all be either or, you know, when it comes time to share. So that if there isn't any, then we're all. Not really that we're either sons of the devil, but really that it's an expression that says that we're not a. That we're not going to get it if nobody's going to get some. In other words, if there's not enough food to go around, then nobody's going to eat. That type of situation. So we'll wait till there's enough food so we all eat. Number six. Entre los individuos como entre las naciones, el respeto al derecho ajeno es la paz. Benito Juárez. Humanly speaking, what does this mean to the Chicanos? Historically speaking, has the United States government and the church abided by this norm? It would seem that the law of Christ is the law of respect, whether respect is of the person, himself or herself, or the respect of the extension of the person, such as his labor, his art, his culture, his language, or his religious beliefs. What are your reflections on Juarez's statement?
It is true that if there is true respect, there is going to be peace. But the problem is that we live in an aggressive society, and there are aggressive societies and there are passive societies or aggressive members of a society. And the aggressive members of society, they don't. Maybe they don't directly try to violate the rights of other people, but in pursuit of economic success in the business and betterment of their own circumstances, indirectly they are not going to respect other people. In the free enterprise, a dog eats dog, and gives the idea that. That is true if there were no aggressive people in the world, that everyone was kind of a semi-passive individual, but there are lots of aggressive people in the world, and therefore that statement is theoretically right if all people were kind of semi-passive. But the realities are that we have variety of people, from the passive to the extremely aggressive. That to those extremely aggressive people, this axiom doesn't apply. That they don't understand it. It's not part of their life. That's what is axiom. That's not their axiom. So aggressive people would find it difficult to abide by that. Maybe he was an Indian, and therefore Indians are, by nature, by circumstances, environment, very peaceful people.
Okay. Número 7. Fatalism and anarchistic tendencies. Virgilio Elizondo has said that Chicanos, like other oppressed groups, suffer from fatalistic traits. Leo Di Nieto has mentioned that we have been accused of having anarchistic tendencies. Are these valid criticisms? What about our hopes and cosmovisions of mutuality and equality for all human beings? The rich, it seems, strive for individuality while the poor strive for mutuality. Is individuality a luxury the poor cannot afford, or the poor really inherited the earth as a cosmic Christ predicted they would.
Well, it's true, first of all, about the Hispanics being fatalistic, in returning to the earth, and that their destiny is death. And they have this, maybe because of their rituals, mm-hmm. and because of their concept of nature, that they do have this fatalistic sense of life that they inherited mostly from their gods, and they're also from their burial services, and from also being perhaps subjugated by 400 or 500 years by the Spaniards, that they do have kind of a depressed type of mentality. And this idea of having a cosmic race is really for those who are educated, for the elite. That idea is not, I don't think it's part of the Indian tradition or the Chicano tradition per se. It's more of the Chicano student rather than the Chicano people. Chicano people don't even know what the cosmic image is. It's only the student that becomes aware, studies it. But it is not a family or ingrown in the Mexican culture that we are the cosmic race. It might be they had some cosmic ideas, the Aztecas or the Mayas had some cosmic in their calendar, in their vision of God, cosmic ideas, but they didn't have a cosmic idea of races as we have it.
Number 8, education and labor. A vicious cycle of the culture of non-being exists in relation to these two areas. In North American society, you need money to get an education, and you need an education to make money. You have neither the two, you do not have the other. How do you envision breaking this vicious cycle that dehumanizes us as a group of oppressed people? Also, will you explain how this vicious cycle keeps us in perpetual poverty?
What was the idea of union, if you're saying?
The criticism often has been that we're poor, and the reason that we're poor is because we don't have work. But a lot of times the reason we don't have work is because we don't have an education. I might add that this concept is more of a criticism of the people in power, like the Anglo-Saxon, against people who don't have power. And not only don't they have power, they don't have an education. And usually there's a vicious cycle between needing money to get an education and needing an education to make money, so that it, you know, it's like a repeating cycle. So that says, how do you break that?
Well, I think that it depends where you come from. You look at life, for instance, the Indians didn't have towns or cities, and they were more rural people. And the European, they started the process of cities for many, many years ago. Maybe 2,000 years ago, they started this process of cities and industrialization and business enterprise and trading and so forth. And the Indian does not have that. It was no necessity. It wasn't part of their ritual, or it wasn't a necessity to. They just lived out of nature, the Indians, and the food and the dwelling, and the their education was retained to the needs of their society. And we're more of, I guess, nature or agricultural people by the immenseness of the territory. And in Europe, because of the close relationship between all the Europeans, that they had a necessity for marketing their goods or for selling their goods or communication and developing different arts and art crafts and sciences because of their close proximity, I think, and variety of people. But here, you need the you need all these things. You have to work and you have to do all these things and study and so forth in order to be happy, in order to live like the Europeans. But if you want to live like the native Indians, well, you don't need all this education and all this work and all this technology and all this. There's no necessity. It's where you want to live that you find this. If you want to live like a hippie, or out in the country and live by nature, well, you don't need 8 years of education. And you don't have to go to work every day. It depends what you want and what your needs are. The Americans or the Europeans are saying, well, if you want to be a European, you need these things in order to be a European. But to be happy as an Indian, you don't need all these things. It's only if you want to be a European or an American that you need all these things. If you want to live like the people in South America, well, you don't need all that. There's different needs. I guess the question of the minorities don't have that opportunity, or they don't have that background. Hispanic, there are very few people who have a business desire or business enterprise idea. The majority of the Hispanics are far from the agricultural, and even the Spaniards were not very much for arts and technology. They were more farmers. Traditionally, Hispanic nations have been more oriented towards working in the farm than working essentially in a town or a city or a community. But the way they see the poor is poor because he's not educated and because he doesn't, because he's lazy, or because he's a minority. It's just that they came from a different mentality, a different view of life, a different environment. And what they're saying is they're just projecting their idea or mentality. And that's what they're saying. But it doesn't mean it's true just because they're expressing their mentality.
Number 9, nonviolence and violence. In our road toward liberation, we have two political and spiritual options. One option is nonviolence, whereas another option is violence. Which option would you suggest for the Chicanos in their struggle toward liberation, and why?
Well, violence really is, it's disorganized, and you can't control it. If you cannot even control the nuclear bombs, how can you control people who have gone crazy or fanatical or think that their way is the only way? I think that the church has always taught that violence or war are the last resorts for action. When reason fails and all other efforts fail. But like the Pope said the other day, that there is the other side of violence is being aggressive power, and you have to have aggressive power like a police force or a military force in order to protect the country or the people. And therefore, violence is from destructive power. The other type is kind of a positive power for the protection of the people. But nonviolence is a rational way, or the way of sitting together with people to communicate, to dialogue, and to find out the differences of opinion. Because if people are going to go into violence because they disagree, they're going to kill each other, because there are always going to be disagreements between brothers and sisters in any family. And therefore, if you want to disagree with your brother or sister, which means that you're going to take out a gun, and the one that is quicker with a gun is going to annihilate the other, is totally animalistic. Man is not supposed to be always in that level of an animal. Just because things don't march our way, therefore we annihilate the adversary. But I think that if we are human individuals, then the intelligence must predominate. And the violence is something as a last resort. And only when the other people are themselves kind of in that same situation, that they have become irrational. Like, when a person is, for self-defense, use violence, or the other people, it becomes irrational, and they're going to commit irrational things or deeds. Then you have to act with violence or with force.
Number 10, the land. The question of the land is a very touchy one, because whoever controls the land controls the people living upon it. Nevertheless, the people have an affinity with the land that is almost sacred. New Mexicans have land grants which the federal government refuses to honor in spite of the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty it made with Mexico in 1848. A large number of Chicanos are migrant workers who farm the land of agri-growers and multinationals. The agri-growers get richer and the migrant workers get exploited and poor. How does one reconcile the affinity of the land with the spirit of the people in the event toward liberation? Is there a strong message or messages here which we have not theologically or spiritually emphasized to break the chains of fatalism and inferiority complexes which too often haunt and destroy our people? How would you utilize this idea? Or is the idea good at all given the time and history and the Anglo-Saxon who in reality occupies the land of our ancestors, both Indians and mestizos? Should this theme be investigated for the purpose of liberating the spirit from its oppressive counterparts? Emiliano Zapata's revolutionary motto was Tierra y Libertad. What does this mean for Chicanos 60 years later?
Well, the land is important as much as it gives a certain, self-respect and dignity that what you put in into the land, you will try to reap some benefits. And if you do the hard and laborious work of farming and agriculture, there should be some, some recompense, equal recompense to the campesinos and the farm workers. And the church has said that the land doesn't really belong to one family or to one community. It belongs to all people, and the fruits of the earth should be distributed to all people, and that we should not be simply possessive of land. And if you happen to have a desert land, then you're just locked out. And if you have rich soil in your area, then that you are blessed by God. It's not a correct theologic concept. But whether in New Mexico, well, that idea of giving to the people there the land that was given to them by a treaty—whether that's going to liberate the people, I don't know. Whether the land is going to give liberation. I think that all people should have their, you know, as a nation or a community, should have land sufficient enough to give proper sustenance to all the people in the community. Meaning like the Indians, where they own the land and community, is much better than when individual private property, because of the fact that some individuals, because of circumstances, they have better business acumen and they can manipulate things to their own advantage, and the people who don't have that particular ability will be left out simply because of legal terminology or legal maneuvering. But I think that this liberation of the land and giving the land back to the people, like Emiliano Zapata, I guess giving the land back to its rightful owners, maybe it was good for Zapata in those days when we had a very limited concept of liberation. And for that time it was good, and for that time it was ideal that he who works the land should also be able to inherit the land and reap the benefits of the harvest. But I think that concept of Emiliano Zapata has been surpassed. And therefore, to say, well, people in New Mexico, the land was given to them by a treaty, but the problem is most treaties they're not really abided by. Many people who actually sign treaties, and treaties are changed by wars. But whether the people in New Mexico are going to be liberated because of the land would be given back to them, because it should belong to them by the Hidalgo Treaty. I don't know whether that is going to bring real liberation to the whole state of New Mexico or to the people of New Mexico as such. By making people wealthy, it doesn't make them free, or doesn't make them join the forces of helping and assisting people. I think Zapata he was a liberator, and he was fighting for the right of the oppressed. This was what he was fighting for. And then here in New Mexico, I don't know whether there is a great number of people who are oppressed. Maybe just people who were not given their rightful land as due by the process of the Hidalgo Treaty. But whether they are being oppressed, people like the poor people that Emiliano Zapata was concerned about, I don't think that's the same situation.
But it is true that we don't have any land. And by that I'm trying to say that, I don't know, there's something about relating to something that gives meaning to existence. You know, it gives meaning to life. And when you have nothing, and whereas before you might have had, you know, like our ancestors at least had the land, and afterwards they didn't have the Indians, I'm referring to. And then the Mexicanos after the War of 1848, you know, lost, you know, all of the Southwest. Well, Mexico lost half of its possessions. That loss there, it's not only a physical loss, but it becomes I see it as a spiritual loss, to the point that the people inherit, by the process, inherit an inferiority feelings, inferiority complexes, an inferiority existence. So that, I guess what I'm trying to find out is there something there sacred that we're missing, that we're not, you know, relating to? By the same token, I'm going to say, take it away from him because he took it away from me. I don't think that's the answer. Because anybody could take, somebody else could take it away from you again. That's not going to solve the issue. That really, you know, becomes a cycle rather than a process of awareness and consciousness and liberation.
Yeah, well, the Pope has mentioned that the land belongs to the community for the benefit of the community. It does not belong to the benefit of the individual only. So the large individual owns all of New Mexico, and he has a legal papers and legal right and supported by the U.S. government. Doesn't make it right just because he has a title. We're saying that a man has a right to land only in as much as he has a right to the fruits of the land. If you're a farm worker and you can't own anything, or you work and you're a slave for other people. But I think it's the idea of land, and as much as you can reap the harvest of the land, doesn't mean that you have to own the land. At least an equal, good share of the work that you put into the land. I guess if you own the land, you work with more interest and love towards the land itself. In modern days, a lot of people don't own any land. They live in a high rise, and they just own a room, and they're very happy that way. But so it's not necessarily, I guess the Indian feels very close to the land because of tradition of being agricultural people and rural people. But it's because of their background and mentality, and over in Zapata's people or New Mexico people might feel very close to the land, but it's only it's not a European type of a mentality. It's not a business mentality.
Number 11, the Catholic Church, Sacrament of Liberation or Opium of the People. Many Chicanos have left the church or have joined Protestant churches because the church refused to face the real issues that affected the needs of the Chicano community. Others have remained to work within or outside the church for changes in the life and destiny of the Chicano. What are your thoughts concerning the Catholic Church and the lives of the Chicanos?
Well, I think the majority who have left the church of the Chicanos is because of I think it's not because the church has not been involved, but rather it's because of the fact they become educated. And once they become educated, the higher you go up in education, then there is an idea of not needing religion. You kind of break away from your past and break away from your traditions. Saying that, well, you don't need God anymore because you're self-sufficient. And that particular process happens to not only persons, but also to nations. As a nation progresses, there is a natural tendency to depend on scientific advances and technological advances. And therefore, many people to whom they are not brought up very religious, they will very easily break away from those religious traditions that they had and and substitute the power of the government, or the power of science, or the power of technology. One power, the power of God, is substituted for these other powers. And so it's really that the like here in this area, the Chicano people left the church because they really the church doesn't give them any remuneration for their work. By attacking the government, the affirmative action programs and so forth, the Chicanos were recompensed for their struggles and for their trying to change society. But many of the Chicanos were not interested in changing the church because they found no personal benefits from changing the church. They had no interest. Why get involved in any work or struggle, whereas there is no recompense for the struggle that you're going to put into a particular movement or service? And obviously, they saw that they could get remunerated from being involved in the educational area, the business area, the government area, in the different colleges. They could get a better job for themselves and for their friends by struggling against these systems that were not helping the Chicano and Hispanic people. But then the reform in the church, let's say the struggle for reform in the church, they will receive no benefit, no recompense. And many of the Chicanos really are not that attached to the church. If you study the history of most of the Chicanos, they were very Christmas or Easter type of Catholics, at least in California, and I presume throughout the nation too. The number of professional people involved in the church, in the reform of the church, not simply related to the church, but who were involved in the reform of the church, were very few. Hardly any. And if you want to, the only way the Chicanos wanted a church to change, because they were not involved. They were just desires or comments. And that way the church will never be changed. It cannot be changed simply by comments. You have to be involved in a process to change. Just like they were in the process of modifying the community to have more programs for the Hispanic and more opportunities for the Hispanics. But they can see real, tangible benefits. Over here in the reform of the church, there was no real, visible, tangible benefits for them or for the community. And by nature, most of the Hispanics are very conservative. The Hispanic community is very conservative, very traditional, very attached to its customs and traditions. And it's not really, it's not very progressive by nature. By all these years of tradition, and they're not progressive people in the religion. The thing that they want to do is they would rather want the church to be like the old church, the saints and the rosaries and the posadas, everyone wants something sacred in their life, and one of the things they don't want to touch is their religion. They want the religion. The religion is sacred, and they want their really never been interested in the church. I've never really struggled for the reform of the church because there's no benefit in reforming the church, material benefit. Secondly, most of the Chicanos have a very, I guess, a very limited understanding of the church, and they also have a very strong traditional and conservative idea of church, and therefore they left the church without even knowing the church, and without even helping the church. If they were really interested in the church, they would struggle to reform it. But rather, they copped out. They left.
So would you say then that it's more of an opium for these people rather than the sacrament of liberation?
Well, it's an opium, and as much as the people are
not involved.
Not interested. It's opium in as much as they are not fully aware of the richness of the Christian faith. They don't know the potential it has, and therefore, not knowing the potential, they say, well. For many factors, they leave it. They left the church. All majority of professional people have left the Chicanos have left the church, and they keep it only when they want their child baptized, or they want to get married in church, or they want to get buried in church. But that's their only. It's a very. They're not using religion as a liberating cause or a liberating force. They're using religion simply as a social ritual.
Number 12, theology. Theology until recently in Latin America, Black USA, Asia, and Africa was always written from the perspective of the conqueror-colonizer. This perspective always expounded universal truth in categories and theory. In practice, however, it always left out the people of different colors. Its theology always addressed and sought to meet the needs of those colonizing, as opposed to those being colonized. Hence, its cosmic vision was lacking, or rather, its universal categories were never developed enough to include those being oppressed. Instead of an inclusive cosmic totality, there existed only a universal partial totality. Hence, a complete problem and need was not entertained in discussion and research. In other words, the dominant theology left out those oppressed. Instead, it addressed the needs of the oppressor and colonizer. From our experience, what would such a theology teach us?
Well, they're saying the European theology was being brought into all other areas of the world, and the European theology reflects the intellectuals of and the history of Europe more than the other nations. It doesn't reflect the needs of the non-European nations. And how they relate to God and to society and all the aspects of life. And, well, that's very true. And I think that it doesn't mean that it's completely wrong, but it isn't completely focused. It served its purpose because of it preserved the faith and preserved the Bible and other traditions, but it doesn't mean that it's in any way that it's perfect. And it's an ongoing process. Truth must continually be sought for.
But it has had a lack of relativity to the oppressed. I guess what I'm trying to say is, not totally. I guess in the spiritual sense, not totally, because, I mean, the very countries that oppress, like even Italy, where the church is located, you know, in Italy. I mean, it's one of the poorest European countries. And if you take Latin America, it's a very poor country too, very Catholic. But by the same token, out of that same experience comes a process of liberation. Mm-hmm. So that the theology, as handed down by the conquistador, we might say, is not totally, it's not totally irrelevant.
I think what the reason why it's not totally irrelevant is because of the liberation really is kind of a new emphasis and a new concept. They thought that they possessed the truth, and other people didn't. But now we know that all cultures and all societies have many truths in their own way of looking at life, and that no culture is superior to another, and culture becomes part of religion. And what they were saying is the European culture is superior to other cultures. But anyway, the concept of liberation is not very, or had been lost for centuries, even though it's contained in the Bible. As such, the concept of liberation had not been given to so many areas of life. In the Bible is just connected to slavery, real physical slavery. But now the liberation can be applied to many other aspects of enslavement. And therefore, liberation now has been become more of an awareness, and it's a really new concept, just like technology. Technology perhaps was known maybe 200 years ago, and now technology means something different from 200 years ago. I think the development and the awareness are different. And now I don't think the Spanish conquistadors knew what they were doing. The majority, I mean, there might have been one or two exceptions, but as a whole, they were not aware of what they were doing. And therefore, it's a lot easier to analyze now what happened, and to say, well, this is what happened. They were trying to dominate and also impose their culture. But I don't think they came to liberate. I don't think they have the concept of liberation. Mm-hmm. And I think this is liberation is an advancement of civilization. Is something where lots of people become aware of, or at least of all the intellectual people become aware of. Not that everyone is aware. Lots of people are not even, they don't even know the concept. The daily working person, the daily working American doesn't even know what it means. So there's a lot of people now that don't understand liberation. And therefore, it cannot be applied to them. They don't know the concept. Even our Chicano people, a lot of them don't know. They don't. All they know is advancement and success. But the liberation, they're not aware of it.
They're aware of what the colonizer wants them to be aware of. Mm-hmm. Kind of. What do you think the job of the intellectual is then? Did he get the message to the people, or?
Well, to those who want to hear. It's more of a prophetic role, and a role in which to influence the people of authority and power. And in other circumstances, the people, the consciences of the people in general, like they're doing in Latin America, they're not going to the power, they're going to the people. But here, the U.S. is so big, and the only ones that could do something with that is more the people in power. Or, I mean, gradually also the people in the grassroots, but that takes suffering. People have to be aware of the suffering. And the big problem here in the United States is that people are not suffering. Therefore, as long as you're not suffering, you're not concerned about liberation. It's just like the Hebrew. They stayed in Egypt, but once they were suffering, then they became aware of their enslavement, and they wanted to leave. But as long as the people are happy here, and everything is...
I think the people are happy.
Hmm?
You think the people are happy, and that's why they won't move?
Yeah, well, that's the...
That's the idea.
That's the whole problem. As long as you give them... the people have what they want, the farthest interest would be liberation. Well, I know that in my personal family.
Yeah.
The only ones that are interested in right now in liberation is those people who are prophetics, who want to be a prophet in society.
They're finding all. They're finding all the actual launch of our community, no? Not just the up there, but they're finding even down into. At the lower strata, I mean, the uneducated. I mean,
and you either you're educated or you're suffering. That you find most people who are interested, because it demands too much. It's very demanding. Mm-hmm. Why should you ruin your life when you can have an easy time, a good life?
Not to worry about it. Don't clap. Gracias.
Mm-hmm.